So, many times in yeshiva, you find fellas want everybody wants the best charusas. I mean, it's wrong. It really is wrong. You can gain much more. You can gain much more many times. You can gain much more from a person who doesn't know how to learn as good as you. I say l'charaf. Be surprised. Sometimes a person who doesn't know how to learn as well as you, intuitively, could say something that has more value than you have. You know what I mean? You have to be objective in the situation. You can gain a lot. The person can gain a lot from a person who's less knowledgeable than him. If he has the proper method, the proper approach, that's the asei l'charaf. Asei l'charaf. Well, this method could even gain from giving shiurim to people to students who really don't have much background. I mean, I've known people that even gain from teaching in Talmud Torah. It's true. The method is asei l'charaf. Yeah. Knei l'chachavar, amri lo svarim v'amri lo chavar mamish. Lefi shetevim ashnayim min o'echad. V'cheinu oimer cherev ala badim v'noyalo. The Gemara says, a person who learns, who tries to learn by himself, and who doesn't learn b'chavrusa, but he goes away himself, even though he's a great scholar, goes away himself, and he learns himself. That's it. So the Gemara says that not only doesn't he arrive at the true theories, but the Gemara says metapshimba. Even great Talmid Chacham metapshimba. They start saying foolish things. See, it's an interesting thing that even though learning is something which requires the least in terms of activity, because it's so readily accessible, you can do it with your mind very easily, but there's one requirement it has. You have to have other people, and by yourself, by oneself, one can go way off, far off, you see. And this is Rashi. You can go far off into the land of theory, where he's completely away from reality. Interesting. No matter how great a scholar he is. Interesting thing. That's what Rashi says. It's Gemara. Cherev al abadim. So, knei l'chachover means, it's an interesting thing. Rashi says, amri lo sfarim v'amri lo chover mamish. What's the amri lo sfarim v'amri lo chover mamish? That, what? Chover makes sense. But the question is whether Rashi's questioning whether sfarim is good enough. That's an interesting thing. Amri lo sfarim. Amri lo sfarim. Yes, some say that Sfarim is enough. That if the person has, a person can use a Sefer to interact with. Yeah, check his opinions. He has Sfarim. But some say no, it has to be Chavar Mamash. It's an interesting question. What is the question really? What's the question? The question is, the point is, see, the human mind, even though it's a great mind, I'm talking about a learned individual, but apparently without interaction with other ideas, he can go off, he can take off and he's gone. But the question is like this, does he need other views? Is that what he needs, other views to keep him on the track? Or he has to have interaction in the process of thought. See? If you say that he needs other views, so Sfarim's enough. Sfarim, he's going through a sugya, so he takes a look at all the Sfarim, they present different possibilities. So he won't go astray. He won't go crazy. You see? He's checked. But if you say that in the very process of thinking he needs somebody, so then it's only Chavar Mamash. Because the Sefer is not going to be there when he goes through his particular process. You know what I mean? The Sefer doesn't know how his particular process is going to work out. Sefer can give another view. Sefer went along his own process, his own method. But to interact in the very process, if the interaction is necessary in the very process, you see, then the Sefer won't do. Then only Chava will do. Right. In other words, while you're thinking, while you're working out the theory, you have to have interaction. Or no, this is what Rashi's questioning. Or no, you only need interaction insofar as the views in the area are concerned. That's what's necessary. That's the case, Sfarim won't be good enough. So Rashi doesn't say, he says there's two opinions on this. Some say Sfarim, and some say Chavar Mamash. One time, a fellow went Devil Leibowitz. You know, was a great London. So he one time, one of his Talmidim, one time went away. He took a position. So he came back. He asked him. He says, "Are you learning?" So he says, "Well," he says, "not really." He says, "Why not?" He says, "I have nobody to learn with." So he says, "What's the matter with the Bayav Rava?" Say, "What's the matter with Bayav Rava?" That's Amri Lasvar. Some say Svarim's enough. But of course, the Chavra is definitely the highest level. Chavra is definitely that. That definitely is good. That's a Rashi question. Rashi couldn't resolve that question. It's an interesting thing. What it means to say is that no mind, no matter how great, is insured against oversight. That's what it means to say. An oversight. You see? And once a person gets... Once a person makes an oversight, then he keeps on going and going, builds up all kinds of theories, but it's a simple mistake sometimes, just a plain mistake, you know? It's not just chareval abadim in terms of the fact that the person can say something utterly ridiculous. The Gemara says that eventually, what loyoidol shimatapshim by the Gemara says, they start saying ridiculous things. But on the first level, you're right. On the first level, the human mind... Apparently, the human mind always has to have an input of stimulus in order to make it work most effectively. And that input is contrary ideas, to be able to balance out one idea against the other. I mean, without that, you can't really hope to attain much. You see, you can't really hope to attain much. That's definite, no question about that. So it's two things. To avoid an oversight is one thing. But not only to avoid an oversight, but to improve the function of the mind has to have discussion. Has to look at different areas. The mind cannot arrive at the true area by virtue of the true area itself. See, it arrives at the true area by going around from one place to the other. And I mean, that's the way it finally arrives at the true area. It goes from one, sees one possibility, other possibilities, and that's why it finally can arrive at the truth. But it's not just a tool, it just simply arrives at the truth. You know what I mean? So that's why you have to have the input from the other sources. That's Rashi's pshat. All right, next week, I don't think this is a matter of ego. This is a matter of the functioning of the mind. The human mind is not such an instrument that it just picks up reality. It has to work it through by seeing different possibilities. Then it arrives at the truth. That's the way it works. That's the way it is. It's not the ego. That's the way it works. And without that, it just can't function properly in order to arrive at the truth. See? That's the type of instrument it is. Of course, if a person denies this, that would be a person who just denies such a thing. That's an ego thing. But the fact is that this is the way the mind works. According to Rashi, this whole memra really deals with one thing. The memra deals with a knowledge of how the mind, a knowledge of how the mind works. First of all, it's limitations. That's what it deals with. First of all, it's presumptuousness, you see. And secondly, Aseilu Chachavra tells you that in the very activity itself, certain things are necessary in order for it to act properly, in order for it to function properly. See? That's right. In regard to, this really belongs, I'm saying that belongs in what we said last week. I just wanted to bring something to a head. With regard to what we were discussing, the two sides of man, that the enjoyments and the previous discussion, with regard to the pleasures, how the pleasures influence the person, and on the one hand, they influence the person and convince them of the good, and the mind influences them and convinces them of the good. And we said the difference between the good man and the evil man is what registers as the good in his mind. I just want to mention that is really wherein Bechira lies. You see, the person is being hit from two sides. There are two forces which attempt to register the good on a person's soul. One is the forces of the pleasures, attempts to register a type of good, and the other is the mind. You see, forces of the mind. So there really is a conflict between two forces to occupy that space in the mind in which the label of the good comes exists, you see? And Bechira is really the soul chooses as to which of the two will be admitted into that area. That's really what Bechira is. Okay? So based on a previous discussion, I think we could have a good description of what Bechira is. Okay, but let's get back. That was based on the previous discussion. Okay. Alright, now we're taking the Rambam on Uknei L'Chachor. Uknei L'Chachor. But the Rambam says, V'yomar, Uknei L'Chachor, Zohar Esai, B'Lashin K'niya. Rashi's not medakted, really, in the Lashin of Asei L'Chorav, Uknei L'Chachor. Doesn't mention anything about it. Rashi's pshat is, the Lashin is Lavdakta. But the Rambam put an emphasis on the fact why he says, Asei L'Chorav and Uknei L'Chachor. Okay. V'im lo'yim tzu'u tzorach l'shtadl bay b'chol libay v'afilu im yitztarach sh'im shechenu la'avosay ad she'yoshiv oyev v'lo yosur me'yimoshech tamid achar etzenay ad she'tischazek a'avosay k'may she'yemru bale ha'musur k'she'tehav le'sehav al midei secho. Okay, what is the Rambam saying here? Alright. Yeah, Rabbeinu is the same thing. Should spend money. The Yavazvei is Nechosov Kedei Lahasig El Chover Tov O Sheikinu B'Fius Devorim U'Beloshin Racha V'Lo Yakbid B'Dvorav. That he should be he should smooth talk him, and he shouldn't Yakbid B'Dvorav. The Yisbi shouldn't get upset at what he says. Should be whatever he says, okay. The Yisbo Limrethiu. Af Kishiyomar Dover Kenegdo. Al Yeshivu Mane. Shebelokin Le Yeshua Ba'ava. Shadeas Chalukim Heim. Upam Yivakesh Dover Devar Oyeva Kenafsha. Yemer Reze Le Yakashiv Le Yasakain. Reze Le Yakashiv. Vim Le Yasakain. Tipori Nachavilo. Vizor Shem Ashlema Yolva Shalom Machasa Peshem Vakishava. All right, yeah, fine. So he explains like this. So the question, so according to Knei L'Chachover means, the Rambam says in Rabbeinu Yonah says both say the same shot. And what does Knei L'Chachover mean? It means Lashon Kinyan. Why Lashon Kinyan? Because you should spend money. Spend money, or it doesn't have to be Dafka money. It could mean also give up certain some of your personal likes and dislikes. Tolerate your chaver. Be tolerant of him. You know what I mean? Question is, who needs such a friend? What kind of a friend is this? Somebody who you have to pay him off in order to be a friend. I mean, you have to tolerate what he says. He embarrasses you. You have to keep quiet. I mean, what kind of a friendship is this? Not a friendship. Nobody in their right mind seeks out such friendships. Doesn't he have one? Just sure, the Rambam says it will improve you. But we call him a chaver. He's considered a chaver. He's not considered a seina. So a person has to get himself somebody that's considered an enemy of his. That he has to pay him off. He has to tolerate his abuse in order to perfect himself. It's very nice to tolerate abuse in order to perfect himself. But don't call it a chaver. It's not a chaver. Can I look a seina?
Yeah.
I have to pay the guy off. I have to pay him. Is that a friend? The problem here is we can understand doing painful things for perfection. I mean, that we're used to hearing that all the time. But the question is, don't tell me it's good. I mean, don't tell me it's enjoyable. Let's not fool ourselves. Asei L'Chorav, just getting back a minute. Asei L'Chorav here is a totally different idea. Asei L'Chorav is Stalik Menasafik is the other Rav. But actually, Asei L'Chorav, the way Rabbeinu Yonah and the way Ram learns, has nothing to do with the Rebbe, the way we explained it before. But Aseh Lecha Rav, the way we explained it last week, was really the basic understanding of the basic root of the Socratic method. Okay. What kind of a chaver is this? It's a pasuk in Mishlei, too. The Rabbeinu Yehuda quotes a lot of pasukim in Mishlei to support a lot of the ideas. There's a lot of pasukim that have the same idea. Machasa peshem avake shavo. What is the pshat? I think with the idea over here is a very important one, and it's one which really has been lost as a way of life. I mean, for a long time, especially in our day, because of the fact that we do not live an analytical life. We just live according to our emotions. We don't live an analytical life. Because of that, this concept of a Knei Lecha Chavra has escaped us. You see, the thing is like this, that most people, as I said before, most people just simply live according to their emotions without really analyzing what's happening. I mean, Seichel plays a very small role. And most people do not realize, but perhaps the most major emotion that they're under is the emotion that deals with their own status and their own, the way they themselves recognize, their own recognition of their own perfection. See? People have an inherent need to feel that they are living in a good way, that they're good people. See? And have an image of them, a self-image of themselves as being good, upstanding, virtuous individuals. See? This image is a very powerful force on the human mind. And what happens is, you see, what happens is like this, that a person, because of that, has to make many untrue judgments. Now, if you take take human relations in general, you'll find there's always a big problem with among human beings with getting along. Even people who are seemingly friendly, but underneath there's always an undercurrent of some type of hostility and animosity. And what happens is the person will always, or usually will point to some flaw in the other individual's character. Like, this person is stingy, they'll say. This person, he's an egomaniac. He's a this. There are different categories, you see. Now, what a person usually does is, if in order for him to maintain a certain superiority, you see, what he has to do is he seeks out in others certain traits, character traits, and those set of character traits, character defects, I should say, which he feels he doesn't have, many times those are precisely the ones that he has, but which he attempts to cover up. But what the person does is those character traits, you see, those defects, he has like a bag full of defects that he really doesn't participate in according to his own knowledge. And those people that have those defects, he immediately breaks his identification with, condemns them, and considers himself a superior individual. He's on a higher level than these people, because these people have these defects, you see. The truth of the matter is that what the person is doing is he creates criteria, certain subjective criteria, for what is considered a good, righteous person. The criteria are really subjective because they're based upon the way of life that he has. Like if somebody will be slovenly, you'll say, oh, that's a slob, I mean, ridiculous, can't keep away from him, he's no good. So the point is, any defect which he doesn't have, you see, which he can always capitalize on a defect which he has in his mind broken off from his way of life, you see, and he can apply it to others. So basically, a person walks very comfortably through life with this type of mental frame, this type of mental framework, and he feels very happy, you see. He feels that he's good. He feels he's always find little differences between him and somebody else, and which to show that his nature is inherently superior. And he's quite happy with that philosophy. Okay. Now, basically what the man is doing is obvious. I mean, he's just taking his own emotions and he's making them into perfection. And he's using these defects, which he doesn't think he has, to put down other people. And many times he even abhors these defects. Like if he's a person that is not stingy, he'll abhor stinginess as a terrible thing. See? He'll say that's a bad thing. He'll create in his mind certain traits which he will endow with certain terrible results. These traits are the bad ones. See? Now, the truth of the matter, however, is that if somebody would look at the scene objectively, he'd find out that there really isn't much difference between this person and the person that he really thinks that he's superior to. There are certain emotional reasons why he has taken these things that he has to be, that he thinks are good to be perfection, and why the other things he's put down. There are certain simple reasons for it. Sometimes the reasons are more complex. Sometimes it's more involved. Sometimes the animosity or the hatred of a certain trait stems from a deeply rooted psychological mechanism. That happens also. Happens also. But whatever the reason is, it is not because of the fact that he is really inherently superior. The reason is because he just doesn't happen to have certain defects. So therefore, since he doesn't have these things, he puts them down, and he has his own things. To be sure that he has his own areas. But his areas are more tolerable to him, you see? Not, however, to the other person. The other person works the same way. The same way, same method. And what happens is, of course, there's also a process of exaggeration that goes on. Like, if you take a look at people not being able to get along, if you ever listen to an argument between two people, you'll always find that the problem usually lies in the quantitative category of quantity. What happens is that the person, if any injustice that the individual himself does is minimized. What I do, I mean, is to this. Whatever the other person does is exaggerated. On the contrary, anything good which the individual does for the other person is always maximized. What the other person does in return is minimized. Mind has convenient ways of handling these things, you know? And basically, if an outsider takes a look at it, it's a little absurd. I mean, you can see the absurdity. But those who are involved have created their own world, their own framework. And they're in their framework. This framework is reality. And the person's likes and dislikes is based upon his own personal framework that he establishes. See? Now, what the Pirkei Avos asks of us, advises us, is one thing. That a person shouldn't live his life in accordance with this type of psychology. A person who creates his friendships based upon his own personal likes and dislikes, and takes these personal likes and dislikes and endows them with a certain superiority, you see, anyone who does that is living a very shallow existence. Shallow existence is shallow because he can't get outside of his own emotional framework, you see. But a person has to really be more universal. More universal. And a person has to recognize that these likes and dislikes depend upon a lot of emotions. A lot of emotions. Some of them are deeply rooted, some of them are not. Whatever it is. But the point is that they depend upon... They aren't measures of perfection at all. They just depend upon certain situations the person was raised in or whatever. Each family thinks, if you notice, each family thinks they have a certain type of superiority. Each family, you know, the way they live, the way they do things. Basically, it's nonsense. Every family thinks that they have it. You know, it doesn't exist. It's just that each person creates this philosophy around their, puts a halo around their own little likes and dislikes. It's a silly thing, you see. Chazal said like this: What the Rambam means is that a person should be able to not only to recognize this in himself. There's two things. It's easy enough for a person to recognize it in himself. That's not the level. But what the Rambam says is that a person should be able to recognize the other person's framework. See? That this other person, everybody's operating in a framework. We can't undo this framework so simply. Not so simple. Not so simple. See? Many times we're not even aware of it. Not even aware of it. Because, as I said, sometimes it's based upon a deeply rooted unconscious source. So you're not really aware of it. So what the Rambam says is that you have to recognize the fact that you operate in this framework, and you have to recognize the fact that the other person has another framework. You see? But not that anything, that there's anything objective, either in yours or in his. See? Now, so what it means like this. When the Rambam says, that's what the Rambam says over here, he says, Kemosha Yomru Bale HaMusa. Bale HaMusa. Kishe Tehav, Lai Sehav Al Midei Secha. V'omnom, Tehav Al Midas Ahuvecha. What does it mean? It means, Kishe Tehav, if you're creating a friendship, you shouldn't do it Al Midei Secha. What does it mean Al Midei Secha? It means within your framework. You have your own framework of likes and dislikes. Patterns that have been established. Be aware that this is not an objective reality. Certain accidental occurrences that are responsible for it. But now, if you want to establish a friendship, you see, you have to establish this friendship based upon the other person's framework. You have to be aware that he has his own framework, his own emotional framework, and you have to be willing to operate within that framework, within his framework. You understand what I mean? Okay? Okay, that's the objective. All right. So what does the Rambam mean? So he said like this. He says, "Vimlo yimtzu tzarach lishtadol b'chalibay v'afilu yimitzdarach shim shechenu la'avasei ad sheyoshiv ohev v'lo yosur meimoshech tomid acharetzono ad shetischazek ahavasei." He should always v'lo yosur meimoshech tomid acharetzono. What does it mean acharetzono? It means after the other person's will. So you cannot, for a person to say, okay, we'll just give up these frameworks. Not so simple. That is too difficult to do. To give up the framework. What a person can do is recognize the framework in himself. That's one level. But even more, he has to be willing to recognize the framework in the other person and operate in accordance with his framework. So you can't demand of the other person to abandon his silly framework. You know what I mean? Can't make that demand. Because you have to realize that you yourself have areas where you're not even aware of, that you are operating with that framework. You know what I mean? So you have to be able to recognize that this is not the essence of man. And that just because you abhor a certain type or a certain style or a certain whatever it might be, you abhor it, doesn't mean that it's inherently no good. But another person could like it very much, intensely, just as much as you dislike it. See? Friendships are based on nothing more than this framework. That's what usual friendships are. Friendships are, in other words, I find the person that shares my likes and dislikes, you see, and that's my friend. That's a natural friendship. That's not the friendship that the Rambam is depicting. The friendship that the Rambam is depicting is far deeper. It's beyond that subjective framework. You know what I mean? It's on the contrary. It's a recognition that man's essence is not really that little that the framework that he operates in. See, that's just an accidental thing, psychological manifestation. But it's not really his essence. But you have to be willing to recognize the other person's way of operation, his mode of living, his likes and dislikes, and cater to them. You see? And be willing to cater to them, even though you dislike it. You see, even though it goes against your grain. But you have to recognize this going against your grain is just a superficial emotion. That's not the soul. The soul does not lie in that area. You see, it's part of the psychological makeup. Yadus maintains that there's something deeper than the psychological makeup. see. So therefore, that's why. Now, what does Ram mean by spending money? What does Ram mean by spending money? Ram doesn't mean you should go over to somebody and pay him and say, I want you to be my friend. Here's $100. That's not what it means. What the Rambam means is that if this individual has in his nature is such that you see that this is what is required, there are people like that. There are people that that this makes them happy. This satisfies them. Spend money on them. It's a certain type of psychological framework, you see, that they like when you spend money on them, you buy them something, they enjoy this. So if this is their mode of operation, you might think, oh, you call them a schnara. It's a schnara, you see. Maybe it is. But the point is, that's the way he is psychologically. That's his makeup. This is what he enjoys. So even if you have to do that, and you have to spend money, you see, recognize you're not so perfect because you don't have that emotion. That's just an emotion. You don't have it. Fine. It's not a good thing to have. We're not saying it's a good thing. But the point is, this person does. So you have to be able to tolerate it, not only tolerate it, but cater to it, because you have to recognize that's not the essence of the individual. So he has this one thing, but that's not his essence. And if that's what the Rambam means. The Rambam says that if he is an individual where you feel he can perfect you, help you to reach perfection, even though he has this thing which you consider a chesaron, is that you have to be willing to operate within the framework of that chesaron. That's a rational relationship. Not only that, but to feel that you like him. To actually feel that you like him. Because once you recognize that this emotion is not the essence, then you can go one step beyond. Then it's not just a matter of tolerating the emotion, but it's a matter of recognition that there's something beyond this. So who knows why he has this particular shortcoming, you know what I mean? Something, no doubt, is some psychological condition which is responsible for it, the way it was raised or whatever it might be, you see? But that's not his essence. You have to look into the essence of the man. Is the essence of the man worthwhile or not? If it is worthwhile, so then don't use these petty emotions to make your decisions to condemn him or to base your friendship upon your likes and your petty likes and dislikes, which is really what most people's friendships are. Most people's friendships are nothing more than a sharing of petty likes and dislikes. That's a very superficial friendship. That's not a real friendship. Because if the friendship doesn't deal with the essence of the man, you see? This is what the Rambam says. It's an unbelievable level. But Knei Lecha Chaver means that he should really be your Chaver. You should feel that he's your Chaver. Because you should be able to, and not only that, cater to precisely those things which disturb you. Those type of things which are disturbing to you. You can't tolerate these things. No, you should cater to them. Recognize it's not your superiority that you're great. It just happens to be certain psychological conditions. You see? And you have to recognize it in yourself and cater to it in him, because this is what he needs. It's worthwhile. Everybody has their weaknesses. I mean, there's no such thing. You're trying to find this idea of finding a perfect individual is nothing more than a psychological myth. It doesn't exist. What the person really means is to find somebody that's as close to himself as he can. That's all it is. But in reality, it doesn't exist. See? That's what the Rambam means. You have to understand something. Really, chesed, when we speak about chesed, in chesed, the obligation of chesed is to really cater to the person's emotions also. It's an interesting thing. But tzedakah is a matter of a person being poor. He has to survive, so you have to give him money for tzedakah. There's no question about that. But I'm saying like this: person comes over to you and he asks you for a halva, for a loan. You know, he's borrowing the money to go get a new car. You don't think it's the best thing for him right now to buy a new car? It's not the most prudent thing for him to do. You say, no, I'm not going to lend you the money. No, you're even Nisa Deraisa. See? It's none of your business why the person is doing this action. See? Question is, where do you draw the line? Yeah. It's none of your business how he's using it. Yeah. The thing is, I would say like this. If, let's say you know a person's a compulsive gambler, and it's a good question. If you know a person's a compulsive gambler, and he asks you for money, I am chayav to give it to him. I I'm going to have to give it to him. I mean, assuming that he's going to, assuming that you know that he's going to pay it back to you. Now I'm going to have to throw it out. If you know he's not going to, you haven't got a chance of getting the money back, then I'm going to have to give it to him. There's no question about that. Well, let's say a person, like the example you gave. Let's say a person, if he can give it back to you, so he's a good gambler, so then it's not so bad. But if a person asks you for a drink, and you know that it's harmful for him, are you mechuyif to give it to him or not? He's asking you for chesed. Good question. Yeah, drunken bum one time, he's off the barry. Came into Ramesh asking for money. Ramesh gave him $5. He told him don't use it for liquor. But he gave him the money. Yeah. I would say the answer to that is like this. That if the person, if you know for sure that the person is completely under the influence of a harmful emotion. In other words, he has no bechira. You can judge for sure that he has no bechira in the area. You see? That he's under the influence, he's completely under the control of a certain emotion, and your giving him will have to result in him doing this harmful action. In other words, there's an absolute suspension of his bechira in this situation. Then I would say that you're justified in not giving it to him. But short of that, you have no right, the person has no right to inquire as to why a person's, as to why a person wants something. Chesed is even with material things. And a person wants, a person asks you for a favor, he wants to get a better job. What does he need a better job for? I mean, for his ego, to make more money. I mean, these are material things. It's not good for him, let him sit and learn better. You see? Can you make a judgment like that? You say, I'm not going to do chesed. Anyway, what's the benefit? Be a tzaddik on his chesed. You see? So the truth of the matter is that chesed really extends to the area to the area of the physical. The area of the physical, the area of the mundane. You're not you have no right to get involved in the other person's bechira, because he has to carry out his bechira the way he sees fit, and you have no right to get involved. You have no right to say why he should have something and not have something. You have no right to make such a judgment. That's his own decision. Unless you see it's obvious that a person is ill to the point where his bechira has been suspended, he's not functioning as a human being anymore, then it's different. Then I'd say it's a different story. You see? But anything but short of that, you have no right to decide in terms of chesed how the person should exercise his bechira. That's his own choice. Of course, if you see that he's doing a chait, you see, then there's a question of whether he should be mechiyachem or not. If you think if there's a chance it'll be effective, so then you should. If you see that it definitely won't be, so then you shouldn't. It's a different story. You see? Now, so therefore, really, by catering to this person's emotions, let's say the person is a type of individual, like the Rambam says, spending money. He's a type of individual that likes to receive gifts. He really enjoys this. The person didn't do you any harm. There was no harm suffered, as the Rambam says. You shouldn't feel that if a person has towards Olam Hazeh, feeling towards Olam Hazeh, that there is some value, he must have these things, you see? He loses it, he feels somebody took away how they really harmed him. So the Rambam says this is all in the imagination. Reality doesn't exist that way. So, this is all the imagination. The person imagines that these things are really good and these things give him, bring him happiness, but the truth of the matter is they don't. So therefore, he overestimates their value. And therefore, when a person takes the thing away, so he has a great hatred towards the person because he thinks he took away part of his happiness. But the truth of the matter is that these things have very little value. They don't really give him real happiness. And the person didn't really harm him. That's what the Rambam says. Yeah. But he'll ask me a question, but it's true. Maybe the person didn't harm me. He wasn't successful. But he sure meant to. The person tries to shoot me and he misses. So I'm liable to try to take revenge anyways. You know what I mean? Even though I didn't do me any harm. So what's the shot? The Rambam's answer isn't really a good one. Because the Rambam's answer is, they didn't do you any harm. Yeah, but he tried. He's a vicious guy. So I'll get him back for trying. And I'll ask you another question. What if a person takes away my time from learning? So I should take revenge then. Because that's not divrei olam. That's not divrei havoi. So I go to the Rambam and say that I shouldn't take revenge. So the question was like this. The question was, why do you dislike a person? Because he actually harmed you or because he intended to harm you? if someone should intend to harm you? The logical answer should be, because he intended to harm you. If a person, for instance, would harm you accidentally, so you shouldn't really dislike him. Whereas, on the other hand, if a person attempts to kill you and is not successful, you should dislike him. It would seem logically that's the way a person should react.
Right.
The Rambam is in the end of Hilchos Deis. He says, Anoki mechavero, over below sase, shenem alosikon, vav pishen alokelov, even though there's no malchus, dea rohi ad ma'od, elo roi lo la'odom lios mafir amidosav al kol divrei ha'olam, she'akol etel ha'mavim divrei hevel vavoy, venom kedai linkam alayam. This is because people who have knowledge know that all the things that exist in this world are all empty, nonsense, worthless things. So therefore it's not kedai, it's not worthy, these things are not worthy of revenge. That's what the Rambam says. So therefore if a person destroys your car, so you shouldn't take revenge. Why? Because it's not worthy of revenge. It's worthless. It has no real value. Just fantasy. Okay? If that's the case, that's what the Rambam says. So, but the question is this. So let's say, for instance, I didn't suffer any loss because he didn't destroy anything, but I should dislike the person because he intended to harm me. He definitely didn't think that these things are have a vavoy, right? So he intended to harm me, right? Now, since he intended to harm me, I should take revenge not because... A person doesn't take revenge because of the harm that happened to him. A person takes revenge because the other individual intended to harm him. Right? Because that's what we're saying. Since that's the case, what difference does it make if these things are hevel vavoy? But the point is that this other individual didn't think they were hevel vavoy, and he really intended to harm me. So I should take revenge. But the Rambam should have said was, the reason why you shouldn't take revenge is because it doesn't make any sense. What do you gain by taking revenge from the other person? That's what the Ramshah said. What do you gain by harming the other person back? You know what I mean? That's what the Shah said. It's not a rational thing. When Yosef recognizes brothers, there's a case for revenge, right? They sold the boy to a slave. What can you do worse than that? I mean, sell a guy, take a guy who was very close to his father. Youngster, I mean 17-year-old, and take him away from the protection of his father, and sell him to throw him into the Egyptians. I mean, put him in a helpless situation. Went to jail, a pit, everything. Okay, there's a good case for revenge, right? Now, so Vayigash says like this: when Yosef finally revealed himself to the brothers, so he said an interesting thing. He says, "Va'ato al te'atzvo." And now do not be depressed. Valyicha beinecha. Don't let it upset you. Ki mecharta mosihena. That you sold me here. Why? Ki lemichya shlochani alakim lefnecha. Because God had a different intention. God made this come about in order that I should be able to preserve you. Support you. Right? He said, "Kizesh nasayim arav bekerav aret vod chameshon mashein charsh v'katzir." Vayishlocheini elokim lefnecha, losum lochem sheris baretz, lachiyes lochem lefleit legedola. Again, then he repeats again. Vata lo atem shlachta mosiheno, ki olokim, vayisimeni loav lefaro, v'loadon lachol beisa moshe v'chol eretz mitzrayim. So what did Yosef say? What did he say to his brothers? Don't feel badly. Why shouldn't you feel badly? Because this was already preordained, predestined, right? But one second. But what about their intention? What about their intention? He doesn't mention about their intention. But if you just take the literal shot in the pasuk, the way the pasuk seems to say, he was saying to them, "You really intended to destroy me. But don't feel bad because God had another intention." So what is it? That same problem? So God had another intention. In the meantime, you wanted to destroy me. That's the reason not to feel bad. Right? So you'll say maybe Yosef was just trying to cover it up, you know what I mean? But basically he meant something else. I mean, he didn't really mean that they hated him. He didn't mean to say they had a bad intention. Take a look at Vayechi. He speaks to them again. It says that after... It says, Nun, Perek Nun, Pasuk Tesvav. Vayiro Achei Yosef Kimeis Avihem. They saw their father died. Vayomru Lu Yistameinu Yosef. Maybe Yosef will hate us. Vashev Yoshev Lanu Eis Kol Horo Asher Gamal Naoso. And now he'll take revenge. He'll give us, pay us back for all the evil that we did to him. Right? Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It shows you one thing. It shows you that he never really developed a close relationship with his brothers. Because had he developed a close relationship with the brothers, they would never say that. See, there was always a distance. And there was a distance between them, you see. And they always thought in the back of their mind that this distance was resultant from the fact that they betrayed him, you see. And they sold him. That's what they really thought. The truth of the matter is there was a distance, but the distance was from a different reason. The reason was because Yosef was on a different level. So Yosef was on a different level. Chazal say that Yaakov taught Yosef the Torah that he learned in Shem Va'ever. Special Torah. What's so special about that Torah? That Torah was metaphysics. You see? And that knowledge raises a person to a different plane of existence. Different type of existence. A person that's on that level does not exist in the same way as an ordinary person. No matter how much of a lamb that ordinary person is. It's a different type of existence, you see? And Yosef really existed on a different level. And that's why there was never any closeness. Because he couldn't really relate to them because he wasn't on the same level of them. They thought the distance was because he hated them. It's not true. He didn't hate them at all. You see the way he answered them. What did he say? He says, then they it seems they made up a story. They begged him. You see? It says, Vayef Yosef. He was so moved that he cried when he saw this, you know? Bothered him. Then it says, Vayelchu Gamecha Vayiplu Lefonav. They bowed down. They were sincere. They really meant, they really were sorry. They really did tshuva. I mean, it wasn't just an act that they were going through to save their lives. They really did tshuva. Really were sorry. So then he said like this. Now listen to what Yosef, what would you think a brother would answer in such a situation? He would say, forget it, don't feel bad, it's okay, I forgot about it already. You didn't mean it, you were foolish, I accept your tshuva. Those are the type of things you say, right? He said, no. Vayerem aleim Yosef al tiro. Don't be afraid. Why? Ki asachas alekim ani. Am I in place of God? And look at it, alright, you know what he's getting at, but whatever. But look at the next pasuk. Va'atem chashavtem olai ra. You really thought evil against me. Elokim chashav l'tova. But God really had a different intention. He intended it should all turn out for the good. L'man ases kayem ezel achi es amra. See? I mean, they're falling on the ground for you. And he himself cried because he was moved by it, right? So how do you do that? Really twist it in there. Say, Atem chashavtem alai ro. You really wanted to destroy me. But God saved me, so I'm not going to take revenge from you. Boy, that's funny. Same problem. If he would say it was from Hashem, and Hashem coerced you to do it, he took over, he forced you to do it, that would be a different thing. But it says, Atem chashavtem alai ra. I mean, Yosef was not a mystic. Yosef didn't believe that Hashem goes around coercing people to do things. Because Yosef believed in free will. So if you did it, chashavtem alai ra, you intended to do it. To the answer, let's go back to the first question in the Rambam. What's the pshat? Why is it that you shouldn't take revenge from anybody who intends to destroy you? The Rambam says, because nothing has any value. So what, but he intended to destroy me, you see? The answer is like this. The answer is, mentioned before. Okay, no, oh. See, the thing is like this. The truth of the matter is that this is a case where there's a difference between the particular and between the universal. See, I'll show you what I mean. In the particular sense, it definitely is true that if a person intends to harm me, I hate the person, regardless of whether he harms me. It's the intention that I'm interested in. See? But the point is like this. See, universally, why do I hate this person? Because I live with a certain framework. What is that framework? The framework is like this. There are certain people that are my friends that could help me. Those people I feel positive towards. And then there are certain people who are my enemies. These people I have to be wary of. See? So a person lives in this world in his mind with two categories of people. Two types of people. One that he wants to be with, that he recognizes have value, and the others that he wants to be away from. You see? This is the way a person lives. A person sets this up in his mind. Okay? Why does a person do this? Why does a person? And why is it so important? His friends. What's the reason that a person needs his friends so much? Why? Because he wants to befriend everybody? No. That's not the reason. The reason is because a person recognizes in life very early, see, it starts with his father and his mother, that he's dependent. He's dependent on goods. He's dependent on goods for goods. He's dependent on other people. So therefore, in order to have a good life, in order to have what he wants, he needs friends, he has to have people who help him get a job, people who help him if he's in trouble, who knows what could happen. Person needs friends. Friends give him security. See? On the other hand, enemies are a source of danger. They can destroy him. So he has to destroy his enemies, and he has to help his friends. You see? That's the way it works. So a person sets up in his mind, and in his in action also, now in his mind, these two institutions, friends and enemies. See? And that's why does he want to take revenge? He takes revenge because he recognizes this person comes from that camp of people that are enemies. Him I have to destroy. See? Space invaders. Right? What? Right. See? Now the thing is like this. What the Rambam says is that if a person would recognize that there is nothing in this world that has any value, there would be no reason to set up this whole organization in his mind. You know what I mean? There's no reason to have this whole organization. So therefore, he would not want to take revenge because he feel he wouldn't have this. He wouldn't have these two groups. Would not exist. Friends, enemies, nothing. Doesn't mean anything. There's nothing in this world that's really worthwhile. Nobody could really harm me because the only thing that is good is perfection. And perfection is something that can be achieved myself internally. There's nothing to do with people. So all you see, the reason why the people are involved in these institutions of friends and enemies, the involvement is based upon one premise. That's the premise that the Rambam goes directly to. What's the premise? The premise is that there are goods here to be attained, and they can be attained through my friends. And on the contrary, my enemies can really harm me, prevent me from attaining this good. So that's why he sets up these two groups. Now he sees a person from this group of enemies, oops, destroy him. Friends, so therefore the person reacts. You see, he reacts to the way these things are set up in his mind. But the Rambam said, if a person would realize that there really is nothing that inherently has any value here, your friends can't help you. Truth of the matter is, those things in life which really are important, which will really make you happy, unfortunately your friends can't give it to you. The only one that could do it is yourself. See? With the help of God. But your friends can't help you, and your enemies can't really take away from you. So there's no reason to have any feelings at all towards people in general. Now, let's say a person tries to destroy you, right? So the point is that what do you mean he's an enemy? He tried to. There's no such thing. I mean, it doesn't. There's nothing. It doesn't exist. You follow what I'm saying? It doesn't exist. So therefore, there's no reason. I cannot be concerned with an individual that tries to destroy me. I have no concern for whatsoever. That institution doesn't exist in my mind. So he's tried to destroy me. So what? It has nothing to do with me personally. See? He's totally neutral towards the situation. That's what the Rambam means. The Rambam goes down to the basic underlying premise. See, the Rambam doesn't say don't take revenge because it's irrational. What good is it going to do you? Because the Rambam recognizes that there's something further beyond that. Just tell a person it's irrational, yeah, but the point is a person will say, yeah, but he's an enemy, I have to destroy him, whatever. A lot of rationalizations a person will give. Say, I'm not doing it to take revenge, I'm doing it to prevent them in the future, whatever, whatever it is. Because he recognizes that there's a hatred towards an enemy, which a person wants to execute, wants to bring about, or wants to do something to bring about harm to that person. See? So the Rambam says, the institution shouldn't exist. This whole idea of friends and enemies does not exist. There's no reason, because there is nothing in the world that has any value, so you don't need anybody. So there's no reason to set up these institutions. Follow what I mean? That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam goes down to the basic underlying rules. Like you said before, if nobody can harm you in this room, you see, you wouldn't have any feelings towards it. There's no reason to have that basic feeling to begin with. That's what the Rambam is. Essentially what the Rambam is saying is that there shouldn't be this involvement. He should not be emotionally involved with people. That's what he's saying. He shouldn't be emotionally involved in this area. In order to take revenge, you have to set up this individual as belonging to a category of harmful human beings that must be destroyed. You see? There is no such thing in the true philosopher's mind, because there's no such thing as a harmful human being. Nobody can really harm him. It doesn't exist. I don't care if somebody... Let's say, for instance, the reason why you want to destroy the person is because he is a harmful person. He's intent on destroying you. You have to recognize in him a sinister force. But if you can't recognize that force in him, then he's totally neutral. His crazy emotion happens to attach itself to you. What do you care about it? What difference does it make if he wants to destroy you and wants to destroy somebody else? I mean, it's just, it doesn't make a difference to you. See?
Yeah.
Essentially, what it means is that you can never assign any individual to a group. So you cannot assign him to a group that is intent on your destruction, and thereby, because he represents that type of an individual who wanted to destroy him. That's what the Rambam is saying. Hey, I'm not saying that there is no need for friendship, you see. I'm talking about friends and enemies insofar as doing good and harm. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying there's no other use for friends. Okay. So now what's the story with Yosef and his brothers? What kind of an answer did he give them? See, really, if you take a look at it, so he gave them a very good answer. The only answer that could really appease them. Because the thing is like this. What did they say to him? What were they worried about? See, when a person forgives, they thought he forgave them. Forgive and forget, you know? I mean, that's it. It's over with. Yeah, but the point is like this. Truth of the matter is that when a person forgives you for some wrong you've done to him, underneath, there is always... Yeah. Because the truth of the matter is that the person is covering up a certain emotion. Underneath, he never really gets over what you intended to do to him. But he's glossing it over. He's putting something on top of it to suppress it. See? So since he's suppressing the emotion, there's always a danger the emotion is going to emerge. And that's what the brother said. They didn't say it, but that's what happened. So they thought that the reason why he's repressing this hatred is because the father's alive. He wants to, after all. I mean, he was so close to Yaakov, brought him down to Mitzrayim. How could he take revenge? You know what I mean? Not just directly because Yaakov would be upset. But that whole scene was such that it lent itself to a state of suppression. So he suppressed the hatred. You see? But now it's going to emerge again. Because the brothers were very intelligent. They knew that a person can't just forgive for something like this. It's ridiculous. He could suppress it, yes. But underneath, it's always there. Always there. So that's why they made up this plan. And they came to him. You see? In order to motivate him further to continue to suppress this hatred. You see? That was their purpose, really. That was their purpose. Okay. They really did tshuva, but they recognize the fact is, he did tshuva, yeah, but the point is that still in all, he still might have hatred over there, and he's suppressing it, so therefore they worked at this, they came in front of him.
The plan
essentially was to extend the situation that existed when the father was alive. That was the plan. Okay? Because that's why they said that after he died, that the father said, Kasom li Yosef, Ana sono pesha chechva chatasa. See? So, that's what their intention was. That was what their intention was, to extend the situation. They didn't trust Yosef's mechila. They didn't trust his mechila. Yeah, a regular person will never forget it. Okay. What? They knew. That's what they thought. That's really what they thought. That's the situation. If they thought that he was a regular person, and therefore, he's going to, first situation that comes up, he's going to remember it, and that's going to be it. Okay. Now, the thing is like this. Now, so what did Yosef do? See, Yosef recognized this. He realized this. And Yosef realized that as much appeasement as he does for them, you see, it still will never help. He can try to convince them from today till tomorrow that he accepts their mechir, their tshuva, and he's meichel and the whole business. And he realized that they really did tshuva gemora. But the fact remains, they're still not going to trust him. How do you know they're still not going to trust him? Because he saw that they came in with a story from the father. So what did that demonstrate? Demonstrate they don't really trust him. Why do they have to say this? Kasam al Yosef, on a son of Pesha Chachatasim. Why do they have to do that for? I mean, if he accepts me, apparently Yosef said they'll never really, there's no way, what could he say? Whatever he's going to say, they're still going to walk away and they're going to have doubts. And even with their plan to extend the situation with the father, they're still going to have doubts. You know what I mean? So that being the case, Yosef really, what he wanted to do was to put them in a situation where they never have to worry again. That was really the chesed of Yosef. And he did it. How did he do it? He said like this. He said, I want you to understand something. You're afraid that I'm going to take revenge. Right? But the thing is like this. You see, you don't understand me. You don't understand me. Why? Because you think that what did I do? I really told myself, how did I forgive you? I forgave you because I told myself that, look, you didn't really intend to harm me, you didn't, let's be friends again. I mean, after all, brothers, and the tshuva, and mechila, and all these reasons. That's what you think. He says, and if that was the case, then your doubts would be justified. Because in such a situation is a very volatile situation. It's always subject to upheaval. And that's why you worry. He says, no, I never thought that way. I knew all along that you intended to do me harm. You see? And I never tried to cover that over. So you'll ask me if that's the case, so why didn't I take revenge? If I knew it all along, and I never glossed it over, so why didn't I take revenge? So the answer is like this. The answer is, Ki asachas alekim ani. I live with a different philosophy. See, my philosophy is that nobody can really harm me. My philosophy is that there's a hashgacha in charge, and he's the one that takes care of the situation. And I simply do not involve myself in any activity, you see, in any actions, that have to do with controlling my environment for my own benefit. That's not my philosophy. That's not my way of life. See, I don't really believe that a person can harm me. You see? And I'll bring you the best raya. You really intended to harm me. But you see, the Ashgacha turned it around, and it was really for the best. Ashgacha had a different plan. He says, my philosophy, what he told him was, your guarantee that I will not take revenge is not because of a personal relationship. It was because of the fact you thought it was a personal relationship that you got worried. You see? I'm telling you, it has nothing to do with it. It's not because I'm trying to smooth over what you did, and I'm trying to say that you didn't do it. If that was the case, then you could always be worried. But the truth of the matter is, I know you wanted to do me harm. But the reason why I didn't take revenge is a different thing. Because I live with a different philosophy. Hasachas al-Kimani. I'm not in place of God. I live with the philosophy of Ashgacha. And people do not represent to me threats, or on the other hand, people don't represent to me sources of good. I live with it directly with the Ashgacha. That's it. That's my philosophy. And that's your guarantee that I will never take revenge, and I'll never do you any harm. Because my life is in line with the Ashgacha. You see? That's what he said. See? therefore, he was able to remove the concern permanently, because the concern stemmed from the fact that they thought the reason why he forgave them was because of a personal relationship. Personal relationship, it's always subject to revocation, because new situations arise. So that's not the reason. He says, I never thought, I didn't think you're good, bad. I know you intended to do me harm, no question about it. But there's a different thing. Apparently you weren't able to do me harm. The reason is because of the Ashgacha. What does it mean? It means the Ashgacha is the one that organizes organizes life around me, and I have nothing to do with, I'm not concerned with organizing this life. It's not my job. That's what I said. Sachas alakimani. I do not live with the intention of organizing the factors around me for my own benefit. And I don't believe that that's the way I will gain benefit. You see? So therefore, I feel neutral towards everybody. Whether it's a friend or an enemy, I feel neutral towards them. I don't feel that they're the ones that can harm me, or that I'm the person that through my actions, I'm the one that could really dictate whether or not harm will occur to me or good will occur to me. You see? I have to live rationally. But I don't believe that I am the one, that I am the one that's in charge, that can determine really what the outcome of events. So I live rationally, and that's it. So since I live that way, I don't feel any hatred towards you. You see? Because the only way I would have hatred is if I would feel that I'm the one that could determine the factors around me, whether they're going to help me or not. See, I can't do that. Like we said before, if a person would recognize that there's no one in the world that could harm him, he couldn't possibly have any feelings of animosity towards anybody. See, the reason why he has these feelings is because the basis of it is that he thinks that there are people that can harm him. He has to say, therefore, there are those that can harm me, and I set them, they're sinister figures, and therefore I have to destroy them. Anyone that seems to take on configuration, that type of appearance, I have to destroy. You see? So the thing is like this. But if a person doesn't have that idea, if a person never senses, never feels that he can really be harmed by anybody, so he's neutral towards everybody, doesn't he? He's in a state of neutrality. That's what Yesa told him. That's why he told him, on the contrary, I recognize that you think the reason why I didn't take revenge is because I didn't think you did me harm. No, I recognize you want to do me harm. But I want you to know I don't live that way. That's not the way I live. You see? Yes. What Yosef was saying is I live in a different framework. I live in a totally different... I don't live in a personal framework. See? See, the Rambam says an interesting thing. Rambam says an interesting thing. End of the Mar Nevuchim. The Rambam says that if a person is really on the highest philosophical level, he says he'll have loving kindness towards everybody. Interesting thing. So Rambam says the end of the Mar. What does the Rambam mean over there? In the contrary, the Rambam always mentions that the emotional perfection is a low level. He says the only perfection that there is the intellectual perfection. The other perfections are nothing. He says take the perfection of midos, for instance. So if a person was alone on an island, he would not have to have any good midos. What are you good midos for? There's nobody there to interact with. So he says, so this is only a necessity of society. He says, but intellectual perfection, that's the real perfection. That's what the Rambam says. Question is, how come the Rambam talks about this loving kindness? The answer is like this. What the Rambam means is that if a person is on a philosophical level, true philosophical level, see, perfection that comes about through intellect, then he loses all his personal animosities and personal friendships. Both go out the window. But what happens is like this, you see. He recognizes in every individual that this individual, two things. First of all, every individual is a creature which was created by God, you see? That's number one. And therefore he wants to help this creature, number one, because it reflects the Creator. Like Chazal say, that a person is a tzir kapa shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a human being is like a reflection of the Creator. Because here is this entity that God created. Magnificent, magnificent entity. Whether you like him or you don't like him, that's personal, petty stuff. See? But the point is, as a creature, what he represents is a fantastic thing. And secondly, because he is a human being, there is a natural identification that he has with other humans. You see? What breaks the identification with other humans is the fact, is the petty emotions. That's what breaks the identification with other human beings. But the truth of the matter is, that if a person was on a higher level, was above the petty emotions, he would have a natural identification with every human being. And therefore, he'd only feel love towards people. You see? And that the crying, why Yosef cried was because it hurt him to see them in that state. That they have to live in such a state of fear. I mean, it's a horrible state, you see? And because when he saw that in them, that's what evoked the emotion of crying. It was the identification for them. You know what I mean? But it was a true philosophical level, not just an emotional thing. Hasach Elokim means I'm not involved in the petty emotions. I don't live that way. That's what he's trying to explain to them. I don't live in the framework of the petty emotions. That's what he means. And insofar as the Ashgach is concerned, you see, apparently God wants the Lachiyah Samrav. Why should I destroy you? What am I going to... How would that fit in line? What benefit to the Ashgach would I... What could I be doing in terms of what the Ashgach would be considering correct? I mean, I couldn't be helpful over here. So then, you worry about the petty emotions? I don't live in that framework. That's the thing. That's an interesting thing. Exactly. That's what he's saying. That's what Ashgach Elokim means. See? He said, I'm not forgiving you, I don't forgive you for it, I don't hate you for it, I don't like you now because you're... because there is no emotional tie between me and the incident and you. That's what he's saying. I live in a different framework. That's what he's trying to explain to them. See? That was the best guarantee that he could say that. First of all, the fact that he said it, the brothers had to accept it. Why? Because for a person would not think up such a thing if it wasn't on their level. I mean, why should you try to fool them? See? He gave them the one guarantee. He showed them the level that he was on in order that they should feel secure. And that was the only real security he can give them. You see? It's an interesting thing. The truth of the matter is that a person in life, just to take the other side of the coin, a person in life isn't usually satisfied with this type of a thing. Somebody one time said to me, they said like this. They said that I would not want a friend that is a philosopher. Why? Because while I agree that such a person would be for me the most beneficial thing, and I'd have the greatest guarantee that he's going to help me. Because since he's interested in justice, he will always help me. And even if I should do something antagonistic towards him, it's never going to bother him. Because he's not into the personal. And his desire for justice, since he knows me, and I know that he's available, he's going to help me. There's no question, what better guarantee could have? The man is doing it out of a sense of justice, out of an internal desire, for no other reason. Whereas friendships are very fickle, because in a friendship you have a situation where, different things happen, different things occur, and then different emotions come out. A person's emotion, person has a lot of unconscious emotions, So sometimes the aggression comes out, sometimes the hostilities come out, and therefore it could switch over to all friendship. These things are very temporary. But a philosopher, a steadfast philosopher, a man who's interested in justice, will always be just. So that's the best friend to have. The person said to me, I'd never want a friend like that. Because I don't want somebody to do me a favor or to help me because of their sense of justice. I want the emotional tie. I want the guy feels for me. I want him to really have feelings. That's a friend. This isn't a friend. You see? That's the other side of the coin. That's the other side of the coin, you see? That's the way, you see, the brothers approached Yosef from the friendship side. That's what they thought the relationship was. And they wanted a guarantee from that side. He said, I'll give you the best guarantee. It's, in this case, for them, there was no detriment. If they were looking for a friend, so then they say, well, we want the emotion of friendship. He told them there's no emotions here, you see? So they went on into the emotional area. But you have the best guarantee that I'll never harm you. So that was the answer he gave. It's relating, the relationship was on a different level. And the truth of the matter is, that's why there was always that distance between Yosef and the brothers. You see? They were on different levels. They could never, you see from the fact that they came to him that they were never close, even after they made up. Right? And the answer is, because they operated on a different level. He was on a philosophical plane, and they were still on the interpersonal plane. You see? That's the shot. Okay, the next question, of course, is like this. The next question we asked on the Rambam was, the Rambam said you shouldn't take revenge because nobody could harm you, right? What if a person harms your learning? What if a person harms your learning? A person will take away your livelihood. Now, you had a good job where you could earn money in 3 hours a day. You could learn the rest of the day. Now he takes away your job, so now you have to go work 10 hours a day. So he harmed you. See? So why does the Rambam say that there's no such thing as harm? The Rambam says there's no such thing as harm, because everything in this world is worthless. It's hevel. It's hevel, right? No, but what about learning? Somebody can harm you? A person burns your house down. Alright, I mean, if you have insurance, it's one thing. You don't have any insurance, or he takes away something that is not insured, so then you have to go work for it. So therefore, he harmed you. He took away ruchnius. And we know, I mean, just like, for instance, you see, and people, of course, will be very quick to think of this reason, that the reason why they're taking revenge is only because of the ruchnius. Just like people of Shem Shemayim are very quick to convert everything with Shem Shemayim. So the only reason they do things is because of Kavod HaTorah, Shem Shemayim, and all for the purpose of God. You see? That under that banner, you can do a lot of evil. It has been done under that banner. See, now a person naturally will always find a way that this harm was purely a ruchnius harm, you know, and therefore I must take revenge. It's incumbent upon me. It's a mitzvah in order to perfect myself. Question is why he's going so quickly to accomplish his mitzvah, but that's a different story. Yes. So what's the answer? Only one possible answer. The guy could say, I could have been learning for the next 10 years, and now I can't. This man harmed me.
It's
in Russia. I have to take revenge. See, it's tempting to say the reason I shouldn't take revenge is because there's no point. That's what everybody says. There's no point in taking revenge. It's not going to do any good. That's not what the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam apparently held that that's a fallacious reason. It's not a good reason. There is no reason to take revenge. That's not going to help you. The Rambam is saying you have to uproot the entire desire for revenge. When a person says there's no reason to take revenge, he's fooling himself.